My name's Charlene. I'm a very grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Charlene.
It is by God's grace, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, an effort on my part. I've been able to maintain my sobriety date of December 23rd, 1974, one day at a time. I'm nervous as a cat. I am so nervous. I haven't done this in a while. But I'm going to proceed. I'm going to do something that we normally don't do in AA because it's part of the story and it set me up for my alcoholism. I was born in South Texas. My mother was Southern Baptist, very devoted, very caring, devoted mother. And my father was alcoholic. A wonderful combination. My father was not a mean alcoholic, but he was an absent alcoholic. There was never any emotion shown in his home, in our home. And he worked a lot out of town, so we didn't see him a great deal as I was growing up. I mean, he would be gone 9 months at a time, and then he would come back for an hour's visit, you know, or whatever, and he'd be gone again. And I grew up in this home, and I grew up, you all probably didn't notice, but I grew up with this little problem of packing on the pounds. And when I was 16, my sister used to say, "Oh, that Charlene, when she hangs around the house, she hangs around the house." I mean, I grew up with this feeling of being insecure. And anyway, my mom took me to the doctor, and they gave me a magic pill. And this magic pill helped me to lose weight. I mean, I lost about 70 pounds in about a four-month period. And I could run faster, jump higher, and entertain you more than anybody around. And I thought that pill was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I graduated eating those pills. And I went off to college, and I was still eating the pills. But, you know, one pill wasn't working anymore. So I went to three doctors a month in order to get the number I needed. And I didn't realize my addiction was growing as I kept taking this medication. Finally, the day came when the doctor stopped giving me the meds. So I discovered, since I was a really bright woman, I'd completed college by then, and I'd had enough Latin to know how to write my own prescriptions. So I picked up a prescription pad one day in a doctor's office, and I wrote my own prescriptions, began to pass them around Houston, Texas. And I was there passing a prescription one day when I felt the handcuffs go around my wrist. And I was taken away. And when I appeared before the judge, he really scolded me harshly. And he gave me an offer. He made an offer to me. He said, I'm going to give you a couple of choices. You have a choice to go to prison for 5 years, or I'll give you a choice of 5 years probation with 6 months in a rehab program that we have in Dallas, Texas. Well, I'd graduated college by then. I was smart. And I took that rehab program, and I went away to rehab, and I spent my 6 months. But, you know, when I came back, they knew nothing about rehabilitation back. I'm talking about the 60s. They knew nothing about rehabilitation. And I wove a lot of little potholders, and I made a lot of clay pots, and I lied to a lot of psychiatrists. When I got out, I was a broken woman, and I didn't feel that I could work in my career anymore. My mom and dad had a beach house down in Galveston, Texas. And they said, "Why don't you go down and try to get a job in Galveston, change locations?" And so I did. And Mama came down and stayed with me for a while. I needed somebody to cook and clean, you know. Anyway, she kept care of me. And we went to church a lot. And she kept saying, "Honey, if you just get involved in church, then you'll be okay." Well, I got involved in church. And it was there I met the preacher's son. And I don't know if any of you ladies have ever really dated a preacher's son. They're nothing like their fathers. And he was a wonderful fellow to hang out with. We did a lot of wild and crazy things together. And finally, after about 6 months, you know, every time he'd open his mouth, I would hear wedding bells. And one day I spoke to him and I said, "Don't you think it's time we take this thing to the next level?" And he looked at me and he said, "Charlene, you know, you're a great gal. You know, you have a wonderful sense of humor. You're fun to be with. You'd like to do all the same things. But there's something dark inside of you. You have a lot of secrets that you've never shared. And you come across plastic and phony. And although, you know, I like you, I have been wanting to tell you for some time, I can't be with you anymore." And he walked out of my life. I became quite hysterical. My mom wasn't at home anymore, and I was over at the beach house, and all the windows were up, and I was crying and throwing things and inventing my emotions, you might say. And my next-door neighbor called to me, and she said, "What's the matter, honey? Come on over." And I went to her home, and she said, "What's the matter?" And I told her what had happened. She said, "Here, you've got to calm down and explain it to me." She gave me about that much bourbon in a glass. She said, "Drink this. It will help." And I can remember that first swallow of bourbon. It went in my mouth. It burned my throat. It hit my stomach. It went to my toes. And then this warm glow began to roll up. And I thought, "My God, I found heaven." I mean, it was legal. And I could go out and I could get my own. And I drank that bourbon. And from that day on, the next day I went to work and I went by the liquor store and I bought my own bottle of Jack Daniels. And I decided that this was going to be a part of my life. And I began to drink every evening when I came home from work. And I would drink until I felt I'd had enough. But you know, the lonely feelings, the desperate feelings, the empty feelings kept creeping up inside of me. And not enough alcohol would put those feelings to sleep. And one day, the next door neighbor, who conveniently owned a bar, said, "Why don't you come on out? And it's a family pub, and we can play shuffleboard, play a little music. We'll have a few drinks, and I'll introduce you to the people in the community." And I went to the bar that night. And there it was where I met the lust of my life. I mean, he was about 25 years older than me, but he had this wonderful job working at NASA. In fact, he was the voice of Capcom during the Apollo space era. His name was Roy. I won't reveal his last name. Anyway, Roy and I danced and we drank and we had a good time, and at the end of the evening he asked for my phone number, and of course I scribbled it on a piece of paper and gave it to him. And the next day was Sunday, and I got a phone call about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and Roy said, "Charlene, why don't you come on down to the house? I'm going to cook some steaks, we can watch football on TV and all that." And I said, "Well, I would love to do that, but you see, my mother and father don't have a washer and dryer in this beach house, so I have to go to the laundromat this evening." So he said, "Well, honey, bring your laundry, and you can do it here." So I did, and I stayed for a year and a half. I moved in. And Roy and I drank. He was an alcoholic, and I soon learned that I was becoming one. And he taught me all the secrets of how to be a successful drinker. You know, I learned how to put orange juice in my vodka in the morning and get my day started. And then I learned all about the 2-martini lunch. By this time, I was working at the University of Texas Medical Branch. I was deputy director of the payroll department by then. They trusted me with their money. It was drunk. Anyway, I was learning to drink, and I was learning to drink every day, and I was learning to drink a lot. But also, I was becoming very, very ill physically. I was developing something called gastritis, and I couldn't hold the liquor anymore, and I quit my job. And he, at his insistence, he said, oh, you can't work with this sick. So I quit my job, and I would stay at home and attempt to keep his house, and it was a mess. Anyway, I became so sick, he called my mother one day. My mother and father had moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, and he called my mother and said, you know, your daughter's very sick. I think she's alcoholic. You're going to have to come get her out of my house. So Mama came to Galveston, and she helped me load up my car, and she moved me back home to Corpus Christi with her. And she said, come on home, honey. I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you. She did. For the next 2 years, 3 years, I didn't work. I'd go to the beach every day. I had a little money saved back. It was slowly dwindling. But I'd buy a bottle and I'd drink on the beach. And I'd hang out. And I could see that Mother was becoming more and more irritated. And my dad was in and out and in and out. He didn't see the problem because he was busy with his own affair. I was there, and one day my mother was very, very frustrated with me. And she said, I smell booze on you. I smell booze on you all the time. She said, why don't you do this? Why don't you go out and try to find a job? Maybe if you find a job and go to work, you won't drink so much. And I thought that was a wonderful idea. So I had a Pontiac convertible. It was a little Pontiac Firebird convertible, four on the floor, overhead cams, mag wheels, and a rip top. So I put the top down, and I went to the liquor store to pick a bottle so I could get the courage to go look for a job. And so I bought two. And I went down to Padre Island, and I had to contemplate where I was going to look for work. And what I did was started drinking, and then I started getting sleepy. And I crawled over in the back seat of that Pontiac and went to sleep. And then when the police found me, I had been roasting in the back seat of the Pontiac. And I forgot to tell you, my uncle was the sheriff of the county where I lived. And anyway, he was the one that they called on whenever Charlene went missing. So anyway, they found me and they took me home, free ride home. And when I got home, I couldn't believe what I saw in the mirror. This half was the color of a lobster. This half was white. You know, I had burned myself to a crisp. So after I got past that, one more time, Mother suggested I look for work. And I, you know, we have moments of clarity in our drinking. And this particular day, I had one of those moments of clarity. And I turned to her and I said, Mom, you know, I want to do that, but I don't think I can stop drinking. And she said, well, honey, she said, what we need to do is we need to take you to the doctor. She's big on doctors. We need to take you to the doctor and let him help you. And this was the beginning of something that I learned about in AA. I never knew what the word resentment meant until I hit AA. But we went to the doctor. He examined me. I was sitting on the end of the table, and Mother was sitting in a chair, and he was talking with me. And he said, Charlene, how much do you drink? And Mother said, about a fifth a day, sometimes more, sometimes less. And what about the consequences? What happens when you don't drink? And Mother said, I get the shakes. She gets the shakes really bad. And sometimes she even throws up blood in the commode. And I just don't know what to do with her anymore because she's been drinking the Listerine too. And I'm just at my wit's end. And, you know, it was the beginning of that resentment because I was becoming more and more angry with her for telling all these private things about me. And at the end of his interview of my mother, he handed me a card, and the card said, anytime, anywhere, when someone reaches out for help. I hope the hand of AA will be there. For that, I am responsible. And on it was the phone number of a lady in AA. Her name was Elizabeth. And the doctor said, "Charlene, we have not found a medical answer for alcoholism, but there is a solution for you in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Call this lady. She can help." So I went home with my mom, and she dialed the number, and then she slammed the receiver into my ear and said, "Talk to her." And I talked to Elizabeth, and I told her about my problem, and the doctor referred me, and she said, "Can I come over with a friend and talk with you?" And I said, "Of course you can." So she came over, and Elizabeth and another lady by the name of Edna talked to me about the disease of alcoholism. And when I heard the word disease, I thought, I've got an out here. It was a disease, a progressive disease. And they talked about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they shared a bit of their story about how they had gotten over and were maintaining their sobriety. I listened. I was still pretty drunk, but I listened. I was beginning to kind of unravel because I was shaking pretty bad on the inside. And then they asked the magic question, "Would you like to go to a meeting?" And of course, Mother said, "Yes, we will go." And then we went to our first meeting together. It was a closed meeting. They opened it up so Mother could be there. And she sat and she took notes. And I was in the bathroom puking my insides out because I was in withdrawal. I don't remember the meeting. I do remember the word God was mentioned. I thought, I don't know what I'm getting myself into here. But anyway, Mom and I went to a lot of meetings together. She, for about 3 weeks, we went to meetings, and she took notes and took names and phone numbers, and I sat back, and I thought, okay, this is good enough for some people. You know, they're talking about divorcing, getting divorces because of AA. Ain't never happened to me. I'd never been married, but it had never happened to me. And they talked about losing jobs, and I'd always been one step ahead of that boss. And then they talked about being in jail, getting DUIs. I'd never had one of those. I'd had about that many free rides home with my uncle. But anyway, I just was sitting there trying everything in the world to identify out. Finally, the day came when my mother handed me the car keys and said, "You can go to the meeting by yourself tonight. I've got something else to do." And so I went to the meeting by myself. And then about a week later, I got a job. I worked in a one-girl office. It was a bookkeeper, secretary. It was for a small construction company. I rarely ever saw another human being except when they would come in on Friday to pick up the payroll, drop off all the stuff on Monday. And so it was a wonderful opportunity for me to get ahead. One afternoon, I was driving home from work. I'd been working there about a month and a half, 2 months, and I decided that two beers wouldn't hurt me. I'd never drank beer. And two beers wouldn't hurt me, and so I stopped and I got a six-pack, I drank a couple on the way home. It didn't feel a thing. And when I walked in very boldly with my four beers in my hand, and Mother said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I've decided I am not an alcoholic, that I can drink beer." And she said, "Okay, all right." And so I proceeded to finish up a six-pack. I did that for a couple of days, and finally I went and got my Jack Daniels, my drink of choice. And I was back in the squirrel cage of addiction again. I was right back there drinking around the clock, waking up in the middle of the night, having a drink, getting up in the morning, shaking, drinking a little bit. I knew if I could nurse that first drink down, then I would be pretty good for the rest of the day. But I had to get that first drink in me. It wasn't too much longer before my boss fired me. And he never really said that, you know, talked about my drinking. But he did comment on the fact that he didn't understand how I could have slipped on the back porch and fallen into a 55-gallon drum of trash upside down. And he didn't understand how that happened. He had to pay a workman's comp claim on it. And how it happens, I've been drinking all day, and I slipped on the porch and fell into it. And when I, you know, when it came to me what I had done, I had to get myself moving back and forth to get the can turned over so I could back out. And I drove myself to the hospital, you know. I drove myself to that hospital, and they treated me for the 3 broken ribs I've had, and I had a black and blue face, and I thought, oh my, I've really ruined myself. And they washed the carbon paper off my face. So they sent me home, and of course, after that, the boss fired me, and I was really angry with him after all the job I had done for him and as hard as I'd worked. And I went home that afternoon, and Mom was there, and she said, what are you doing home so early? And I said, that SOB of a boss fired me. Can you believe him doing something like that to me? After all, I am a college graduate, and I do a wonderful job. And she said, whoa, wait a minute. She said, Charlene, never will forget this. She turned to me that day with tears in her eyes. She said, Charlene, I love you with all my heart. You're my firstborn child. But I'm tired, honey. I'm tired of making excuses to bosses. I'm tired of watching you throw up blood in the morning. I'm tired of picking up your hot checks. I'm tired of making excuses to the family. I'm tired of covering up your illness. And although I love you with all my heart, you can't live here anymore. She did the last enabling thing she could have ever done for me. She packed my suitcase and put it in my car and wished me well. Well, I decided then, Corpus Christi is only about 120 miles from Mexico. So I decided that I was going to go to Mexico and I was going to get even with her. I was going to get even with that boss, and I was going to get even with that, with my mother, and make her feel really sorry for what she'd done. And the sick thinking. I decided that I would kill myself. So I went into Mexico and I bought, I think it was 8/5 of bourbon, and went into a motel, and I drank for 4, 5, 6 days, trying to come up with a plan on how I was going to kill myself. I was killing myself and I didn't even know it. I thought about pills, and then I remembered that what the judge had said about going to prison for 5 years. I didn't want to go there. So anyway, I finally finished drinking the booze I'd bought, and I reached into my purse to get more money to go buy more. And in my hand slipped out the card that had been given to me by the doctor that said, anytime, anywhere, when someone reaches out for help, I hope the hand of AA will always be there. And on it was Elizabeth's phone number. And I immediately was overwhelmed with this feeling of hope. Hope was the only way I could describe it. And I remembered the happy, smiling faces that I'd known in AA, the people that had accepted the fact that they could live with joy in their heart, not drinking one day at a time. And I wanted what they had. And I, with that hope and all, I went to the nearest phone, and I called Elizabeth, and I told her where I was. And it was December 22nd, 1974, and it was so near Christmas. And she and her husband said, no problem, we'll come get you. I could not believe it. And I went back to my motel room, and I laid down and had the first most serene sleep I'd had in forever. I truly feel the hand of God touch me that day. I truly believe that that was my surrendering point to this to Alcoholics Anonymous. They came, and Elizabeth told me, she had me in her car, and her husband got to drive my hot rod with a ragged top down. Anyway, we got back to Corpus Christi, and she said, "Charlie, we found a place for you." They just opened a facility for women. It had only been open for 2 months. And this week, he said, "We have found this place for you. We're going to have you go over there and talk to the fellow, and we'll see if we can't get you admitted." So anyway, they did, and I was the Coastal Bend Halfway House, Coastal Bend Alcohol Rehab Center. It was a halfway house. And I sat that day, and I talked to Charlie Acklin, who was the director, and he was in recovery himself along with everybody on staff there. And they, Charlie talked to me about, "You know, Charlene, when you come in here, you have to give up the bottle." And I said, "Oh, well, it's in my red suitcase." I had packed a little booze in there just to help ease the pain of the detox process. So anyway, the therapist took the stairs, two steps at a time, running upstairs to get that bottle. I asked her years later what she did with that bottle, and she said she'd given it to her son, who could drink responsibly. So that made me feel better that it wasn't wasted. My first year of sobriety was a gift. I lived in that facility as a client for 6 months, and I was introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took it very seriously, and I became deeply involved in recovery. Elizabeth became my sponsor, and she was a wonderful sponsor. She never told me what to do. I would go to her with a problem, and she would say, "You know, Charlene, the solution is in the book, but let me tell you something similar that happened to me." So she was following the directions as it was laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we went to a lot of conventions, and I had such a joyful year. So it was so wonderful. I never shall forget the day that we did the third step together. And we were in the backyard of the facility where I lived, and there was a big weeping willow tree. And I had a mood ring on, and we got down under that weeping willow tree, and we recited the third step prayer on our knees together. And as we finished up, I looked down, and my mood ring was a bright, bright blue. And I thought, "My God is showing himself again. He's here with me today." When I was 6 months sober, I went back to school, and they asked me to be the manager of this women's facility, and I could live in and just make sure the women came in, weren't drinking, whatever, but I could still go to school. I went back to school, and I started working on a master's so that I could work in mental health and work with substance abusers. And I stayed there until I finished my degree. In the last year, when I was wrapping up and finishing up my degree, I was going to a meeting out at the Naval Base, and one of the fellows out there said, "Charlie, why don't you go when you get finished here and try to get a job with the Navy, because you've got a wonderful background, got a wonderful education, and you're just the type of people they're looking for in these civilian positions, and they're opening up 12 new units around the world." And I said, "Okay, yeah, I'll do that." Never dreaming in 100 years I'd get the job. Well, I did. I got orders one day after interviewing. I got orders to Subic Bay, Philippines. And as director of a 12-bed facility, overdoing it, God. Anyway, I'd never been out of the womb of Corpus Christi AA. I was so shaky and so nervous. I thought, "What am I going to do?" And I can remember, in the Navy in its infinite wisdom, booked me on a champagne flight to Honolulu. And I kept turning the glass over, and the lady would come around and turn it back. And finally, you know, it dawned on me. I thought, "They'll never know, will they?" And then I thought, "Yeah, but I'll know." And finally, I asked for coffee, and she brought me coffee. And when I got to the Philippines, what an adventure. I was director there of this 12-bed facility. They later, while I was there, changed it into a 24-bed facility. And I worked in treatment and had and got really involved in AA and establishing AA in on the economy, we call it, outside the base for the Filipino people. And I established a place called the Serenity Shack. It's still in existence. It's an AA clubhouse in along Apo City, Luzon, Philippines. And it's such a wonderful, wonderful place there in the Philippines for the sailors coming in and out. I don't think they do that so much since Marcos is not in office. Well, I think they closed that base, but it worked so well for the sailors. But, you know, I was there working hard and going to AA and doing some good things for me. And, I met a man, a Navy chief, and he needed me. He had two children, and they needed a mother, so I married him. And life was good. You know, Doug has two more years of sobriety than I do. He's still in the program and around. And we married, and I raised his children, started raising his children, which gave me a whole new perspective on recovery. Especially that teenage girl. she was a character. But it was a really good adventure, but there was still something missing. And every night when I go to bed, I'd say, "Dear God, please bring me some women to work with," because I was the only woman in AA. And 1 week, God brought me five all in 1 week. I could not believe it. I had two in detox and three transfer ins. They were housewives. Their husbands had transferred into the Navy base. And so we formed an AA group, you know, our first women's group. And it gave me somebody I could talk to and share with and sponsor and all that kind of good stuff. And I felt the joy again in my heart of being a part of recovery, a woman's recovery. Excuse me. In 1981, the Navy transferred Doug to the Pentagon, and they offered me a job at Bethesda Naval Hospital working in their Navy rehab program there. But en route, we stopped in San Diego, California, and I went to hear this renowned psychologist give a lecture at the naval base there, and in it he talked about recovery and the importance of recovery and what of all the psychological things that occur. And he said, after 5 or 6, 7 years, an alcoholic really doesn't need to go to meetings anymore because they've established their behavior. And I lodged that right back there. I put that right in the back of my head. So I made my way to Washington, D.C. and went to work at Bethesda. And not going to meetings, after about 2 months, this little fellow, I was giving a lecture one day, a young sailor, he's about 18 years old, he raised his hand and says, "Miss Charlene, you said that you're a recovering alcoholic, didn't you?" And I said, "Well, yes, oh yes, I've been sober 7 years." And he said, "Well, ma'am, I need to tell you your character defects are showing." And I was devastated. I thought, that'll squirt. You know, how dare he talk to me? After all, I had 7 years of sobriety. That evening I went home still angry but in tears. And the more I got to thinking about it, the more I realized that I was in bad shape. I was really in bad shape because I put that work and the family ahead of my program. And it was there that I made my way to an AA meeting over at Andrews Air Force Base. And you would have thought, well, they thought I was the newcomer. I had tears streaming down my face and I couldn't stopped sobbing, and they were there welcoming me and showing me the big book. And I had to finally, I thought, you know, I've got this sobriety, you know. And so anyway, that became my home group. And I lived there for 5 years and worked with the Navy up there. And in that period of time, my marriage was falling apart. And I knew that I had married too soon because our values were so different. You know, he wanted something else out of life than I did. My mother started becoming ill. She developed Hodgkin's disease, cancer, and she called and was telling me about it. So it gave me a good excuse to run. So I told Doug that I was going to go take care of my mother. She was in South Texas. My dad had passed away, and Mom was all alone in the world. And so I left my job and went to Texas and moved back in with my mother and started taking care of her and found another job. But it gave me an opportunity to repay that lady for everything she ever did for me. I think God graced my life and he allowed me to do that. I got again involved with my old friends in AA. By the way, the job that I got was director of the treatment center that I had gotten sober in. Charlie retired and they appointed me director. And I worked really hard. It was a 26-bed facility when I took over. My mom died in 1989, and I was still working there. But I was building and creating, and what I had done is I had managed to develop a 30-bed detox on this side, 60 beds of treatment on this side, and all of the other beds, 40 there were, was your primary care. This was halfway houses of primary care, and I had developed them through writing grants and contacting people and buying property and all that kind of stuff, and not going to meetings and working 14, 16 hours a day. And one day I woke up, and I felt empty inside, and I was washed. I was just burned out. I had nothing more to give. And I can remember that day. I called my ex-husband, who lives in Centerville, by the way. If you need a horse boarded, he's in Centerville. Anyway, Clifton. I called Doug, and I said, Doug, I need a sabbatical. I need to get away from everything. I need to refocus and get involved in AA. Can I come stay with you for a while? He said, sure, come on. We remained friends, even though we just couldn't. Anyway, I came to Virginia. I quit my job, packed up my microwave and my Yorkie. I never will forget that combination, you know. We came to Virginia, and I moved in with Doug. I was there about 3 hours, and I realized why we had divorced. But he was good. He let me stay there, and I became really involved in the Rebos Club up in Manassas and went to a lot of meetings. And I went over to Andrews Air Force Base a few times when I decided to venture out and all. But I got that connection again, and I was back on the beam spiritually. And that was so important to me, After about three or four months, I started looking for work. And I read an ad in paper for a little job in a town called Culpeper. And I thought, well, this is just what I think I'd like to do. And so I came to Culpeper. This was in October. I came to Culpeper, and I interviewed for the job. And I went back to Clifton. And then I didn't hear anything from them for about a month. So I went and interviewed for another job, and I got it. It was in Arlington, Virginia, working at a detox center. And I was supposed to start work for them on December the 5th, 1994. But Culpepper called me the Friday before and said, would you like to like this job? And I said, of course. I'd love this job. So anyway, I came to Culpepper. I called the other company, said, I'm not going to show up. Anyway, came on to Culpepper and went to work at Rappahannock Rapidan Community Service Board. It was there that I got to do something that I had wanted to do all my life, and that's work with women in recovery on an outpatient basis. But more importantly, I became involved in the recovering community right away here. It was important to me because I had been through too many near scrapes, I'll call it, where I had gotten away from the program. The first New Year's I spent looking for where we were going to have the AA party. And I went to a lot of meetings and nobody ever mentioned anything about it. So I went back to my apartment and I spent that first New Year's in this area alone. December the 31st, 1994. And I thought, this has got to change. This has got to change. I went to Rapidan and I met Doc. Most of you all remember Doc. They've been around a while. And he said, we need a GSR. And I said, okay, I'll be one. I know how to do that. And I got involved in AA again, became very active. And then I went to the meeting. I said, we need to have an alkathon. And they said, an alkathon? What's an alkathon? I said, this New Year's, we're going to have an alkathon. And so I helped develop that first alkathon that's been going on, by the grace of God, every year since then. That's such a wonderful pleasure to be able to stop over there and see how it's grown and see how people are coming. And it's providing that safe, enjoyment place for people to celebrate the new recovery, their recovery in AA. We got that started, and then several years later, I said, you know what we need to do? I'm always coming up with these bright ideas for we, the we program. I said, we need to go to Akron, Ohio for Founders Day. I think you remember that trip. Akron, Ohio. And so we got two vans, and we went to Akron, Ohio. We had a smoking van and a non-smoking van. I was smoking then, so I was driving that one, of course. And we got into the college there and boarded in the college and went to all these wonderful meetings. And then they gave us tours of Akron, Ohio. And I never shall forget, when we got up to Dr. Bob's house, there was this little guy. He couldn't be more than that high. And he had on this bright, bright blue suit and these watery blue eyes. And he held out his hand when I got off the bus and he said, welcome home, Charlene. And that just made my heart glow. Welcome home, Charlene. And I climbed, by the way, I climbed their 12 steps into the house, into Bill Wilson's house. Dr. Bob's house. And I climbed there and I got to tour that. And what a wonderful adventure that was, being able to explore with the founders of this program. The only thing I missed, I was under the impression I was going to be able to ride a motorcycle out to the cemetery. They didn't have anybody that was willing to buddy with me that day, so I didn't get to do that. That was also another experience. When those motorcycles came rumbling down through the tall buildings in Akron, the whole area just shook with joy. Anyway, I've just had so many pleasant experiences since being here in this area. About 4 years ago, I retired, and then 2 months later, they hired me back because they were opening a new Boxwood, and they needed someone to write policies and procedures, and I'm great with a pencil. Anyway, They said, come on back and we and do this for us. So I came, went back to work for a couple of years, and I saw the new box would become open. Now, for those of you who haven't been there, it's a lovely facility. But then I retired again 2 years ago. I went through a whole year of grieving. I grieved the loss of not being able to work with women and work in the treatment setting. So I found the solution to that is sponsorship. So I have been sponsoring women in recovery and helping them along the way. So I still go to three to four meetings a week. I think that's really important. I try to get to a step meeting and a big book study every week, and then open discussion meetings and about a speaker's meeting once a month. And that provides the balance in my life that I need. I'm truly grateful today, you know, grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. It saved my life, and it brought me back to a God of my understanding, not my mother's Baptist God, the hellfire and brimstone kind, but a God that loves me and forgives me and looks over me and takes care of me on a daily basis. Life for me today is very, very peaceful. I live in Orange. I've got a little house, and Monique and I were talking about my cat. He's been the most dependable man in my life since. His name is Sir Poops-a-Lot, and he does. And he brings a lot of joy in my life, you know, and we have a pretty good understanding at this time. I never dreamed those last days of drinking I'd live to be as old as I am, as young as I am, whatever it is. But I'm so grateful to God for having given me all the wonderful blessings and all the wonderful adventures that He has allowed me in my recovery. And it's so good to be a part of you all tonight. And I want to thank you all for inviting me to speak. Thank you.